Hello.
Zach Meir, Francis Hunt, how are you, sir?
I'm okay. I'm recovering from yesterday's Master Investor experience.
Fabulous. It sounds like it was a joyous event for you.
Well, it was actually quite joyous. Are we recording at the moment?
Indeed we are. All your sins will be revealed.
Well, there we are. Then I will say exactly what I was going to say before I asked you. It was amazing to be both at a stand which is about sort of, I don't know, 10 feet away from you, 2-3 meters away from you.
Indeed.
And the crowds of adoring fans that were, you know, at your stand.
Oh, you noticed, did you?
I did notice. I also noticed that there was a sort of the market sniper video on a mega screen there. So I saw you for like 5 or 6 hours a day on loop.
So you're actually having nightmares last night, were you?
It has actually taken me a while to just sort of adjust my psychology. But no, it was great. And then at the end of the event, we were in the sort of the VIP lounge where they were, you know, all the sort of, it was, you know, it was a very, very joyous affair. And you sat right beside me, burst my interpersonal bubble. And, it was great. I put my arm around you.
No, I think you're taking it a bit too far now.
No, but it was you were
in fine
very
spirits,
close
though. I will say, post event,
it was
it was very good.
It was great to sort of chat to you in person rather than just on Skype. So I was actually trying to extol the virtues of the good old fashioned analog interactions.
That's right. Lest we all forget about them in this virtual environment. Yeah, I find a lot of my interaction nowadays seems to be online, and
I was thinking
comes at the cost of other things, doesn't it?
The last time we met, sort of, and had a proper like meal and a chat, I think was like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And since then, it's all I'm either interviewing you or you're interviewing me, or we're on Skype, or you have a feeling of knowing
slightly
somebody very
more
well,
synthetic,
actually,
isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So that's the thing. So it's that's what I was trying to say. So I mean, the arm around you thing was actually the
metaphorical.
It's metaphorical, exactly. Yes.
Exactly.
Metaphorical hug.
A metaphorical hug, a re-embrace of the physical essence of On Cells.
Yes.
Absolutely. Fabulous. Zach Meir, delighted to have you. As always, always a prudent insight. In fact, one of your fans who came to me, so having spoken so greatly of my groupies, I must say that you have your own share, says, Zach must be the driest man. I love it. He's the driest man on Tip TV. He's a perfect foil. And so, yeah, that was Honorable Mr. Molina, who stopped over by your stand and said as well, so you're well loved and liked, and welcome back
to the Phoenix Reset podcast. That's right.
Welcome back. And I'm going to kick off to actually showing a chart as well, because I understand Zach is coming, good listeners, with a specific theme in mind. And he's going to be talking a little bit about gold and silver. So I've got a chart up. It's the XAU-XAG chart. Zach, over to you.
Well, no, it's just, I don't normally, one of the things I've been bemoaning is the breakup of the traditional relationships in the markets, you know, between the dollar and equities and bonds and all that sort of stuff. And so that's sort of killed hedge funds, hasn't it, really? Because hedge funds basically rely on, or, you know, did rely on, relationships between, you know, the bonds collapse and the equity markets have to do this, and you know, it's Chris Benoti's thing about 2015 will give us a decline in the stock market which will be remembered for 100 years, and he then loses £200 million by getting it wrong.
Years growth was it? 5 years of growth that he actually gave up. I think this is a gentleman in the FT we're featuring.
Yes, well,
that
Chris
he lost essentially.
Chris Benoti is I have a special understanding of him because he went to my school. He's like about 5 or 10 years older than me, and he's one of the few people that went to my school since Churchill have actually done anything of any note. But then, obviously, you get this sort of walking on water cult of personality thing going, as you would expect. And I think, obviously, I've still got a long way to go to get up to his dizzy heights. But the hubris angle and other angles like that. It's very, I can understand that once you've made a few hundred million pounds, it's difficult to avoid those sorts of things. But last year's call of, you get into a sort of King Canute.
Explain for the listeners the whole narrative, because many won't have any of the story. Take us back. So essentially, he's walked on water for the better part of 5 years and delivered a fair amount of alpha, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. And some very clever ideas, very good ideas. But I think it's one of those things that with hedge fund managers, the other guy who was fantastic for a while as well, Hugh Hendry, I think he's from Eclectica now, but I think he was, I can't actually remember, maybe he was with Crispin Odie, I don't know, but maybe he was with Odie before. Both the hedge fund industry, it throws these heroes up, and then I suppose it goes down, but they sort of, they make mistakes, which they're simple mistakes, schoolboy errors, after getting some really difficult and clever things, or difficult and complicated things right. So it's always a sort of, I'm trying to work out what the analogy is.
Is it not always failing on the basics?
Failing
you
on the
always
basics,
end up
yes.
fail on the basics, don't you? You've got to always have that foundation of basics. Then you can be clever. But at any point you get the basics wrong, doesn't matter how much you've achieved on the cleverness side, the higher up the pyramid, if the foundation falls, the whole thing comes down, doesn't it?
I think it's one of those things that the clever people get clever things right. But the chink in their armor is the simple things, the obvious things, which you think afterwards, well, Napoleon going for Russia, it's just like, what were you trying to achieve there?
Mm. Yeah.
You know,
how did you ever think the logistics
were going to
cope?
It's like biting off more than you can chew. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that sort of stuff. And just Thatcher with the poll tax. And the poll tax was the most basic and obvious thing, which was not going to work. And, you know, that was her downfall. And so, yeah, the downfall, that's the word, isn't it? Because obviously it was used for Hitler. But the downfall concept is one that, you know, clever people get flawed by silly things. And you do enjoy it, if you're not one of the clever people, because you enjoy them doing something which is very, very silly. But that's what happens.
Mm. And what do we know what trading angle or idea he took or where he got stumped up? Give us some of the skinny on what's
well, no,
done
I
him.
The detail, I'm not a details person, but it was just, I'm referring to Chris. Times Rich List has come. He's one of the big losers in that. So he's gone from being a billionaire to being just a.
Say the name again, Zach. Sorry, we've
Crispin,
had a few cutouts.
Sorry, Crispin Odie from Odie Asset Management.
Crispin Odie, yes, and it's one I've heard in many times before. And you
it's
say
worth googling that name. But it's just a King Canute thing, which you get once you've made a lot of money, then you sort of almost feel that you can push the market with your own momentum of your previous momentum. Being
yeah,
right.
The Messiah syndrome, the God syndrome. I actually have a very interesting clip that I think it's interesting. I hope if others have fed back that it's interesting. I shouldn't say it's very interesting if it's one of my own, should I? Sounds very gregarious. But one of the worst things that can happen is that I find overperformance eventually begets an underperformance. And for those, as a gentleman like yourself, you may not follow the ungodly arts of UFC, which is a pugilist gone bad with a lot of kicking, punching, and elbows as well. But there was a fighter, an Irish fighter, that was creating a lot of hype. He won his last fight against a long-standing champion of 10 years in 15 seconds. The conferences just started talking about this glorious, how, you know, he's an artist of movement, and it just started getting rather grand. And the next fight, he fought against a late comer because someone fell out at the last minute, who was just known for having stamina and being able to take a punch, and he got beaten badly. And it was almost like he went up two weight classes. He thought, I'm top dog at this, you know, let's go straight to the bit where we conquer the world. And, you get brought down very, very strongly. You had a bit of overperformance. It was slightly lucky, and I'm talking about Conor McGregor for the fight fans. And the next thing you know, it goes to the head, and you think, well, I'll just go up two weights and beat everyone there. And actually, the bigger guys, they take a punch better, and they throw him a lot harder as well. And next thing you know, and it's kind of like that in everything. I kind of see this.
Well,
I see trading
hubris, ego hubris, and all those sorts of things. And I think that best things, one of the best ways of succeeding in the financial markets is, you know, is having a detector of when you when you're speaking to people. Obviously, I interview a lot of people every day, and it's amazing that once you click that somebody's giving you this ego thing or the hubris thing or the sales thing, all those unattractive traits, you're very quick to not listen to them. Whereas if somebody comes on and says, well, I think the gold silver ratio is at its highest since 2008, 2007, you look at it and he's saying it to you in a sort of a normal way, rather than coming on as the messiah or some great guru, you take note. And in fact, that was really what I was referring to with Charlie, that the overstretched gold silver ratio has actually worked.
Yes. So for those that are will be watching this on the YouTube, I brought up the chart for Zach, and we actually ran the 82.5 level. In fact, if the platform serves me well, we are in well through the 82.5 level, and we're now down at the 72.5. So that means where you previously took almost 83 ounces of silver to get 1 ounce of gold, that's dropped by 10, which is fairly significant in percentage terms, isn't it, Zach?
I think two or three people.
Zach, can I stop you? Sorry, we have got a bad audio at the moment. Really bad. You're doing Darth Vader on us. Are you? Is the Wi-Fi good on your side? You're very mumbled now, and you were broke out for like 5-10 second segments at a bit. So we're getting very snatchy.
Is this any better?
Very crackly still.
All right. I'm standing right over the router, so it's a bit strange. Is that better?
That is better. It's not loud, but it's very clear.
Okay. Well, I'll stay where I am for a while then. Okay.
Yes, let's do that and talk up as well, please. I can up the volume in the edit, but keep it loud. Much better for now. Yeah, so apologies for that. I may just make you restate a half a minute if you can. We were just discussing the gold and silver ratio.
Yeah, the gold and silver ratio, the idea of gold being at a sort of a record high versus silver, or at least the top of the range over the last sort of 5-7 years, was an idea that sort of was served to me rather by several commentators over the course of, I suppose, March and early April. And, they seemed, you hear so much information and you get the feeling, well, instinctively, this is a correct call, this is not a correct call. In that case, I thought it was a correct call, especially after referring to the chart, which I did. And I suppose silver has risen a dollar or more over just a very short period.
Yes, that's right. It's one we did pick up on and we spoke about and did some YouTubing on as well, because there's a big following on precious metals. So, I mean, I'm glad you're ready to talk about them today. You get the diehard gold bugs, which will be bulls in any market, and I'm not an advocate of that. In other words, I've listened to Peter Schiff's YouTubes and a lot of other people, which are just, buy all the time. And many of them actually sell gold as well. So they have an incentive to be bullish. I think they're actually are correct, and if you're buying for a long-term view on an accumulate basis as you're earning cash and you're averaging out, that's also okay. As a trader where there's leverage involved, it's actually not been a long trade for 3 years, from 11 to 15, and during 15 it's been choppy and sideways with some ugly sell-offs but with a little bit of spicy upside, so there was clearly an inflection potential. It could have continued, it could have reversed, but I think now with this massive smashdown on the silver ratio, I think having come on Tips TV and said, yep, that looks like a turn for me. Do you concur? You think this is the big sell that I'm showing is the one?
Hello?
Yep, I guess that you still find fine.
I've got a bad line myself now. But basically, I think I met you a few months ago and you were saying that you were a great fan of silver. The second piece of the puzzle was that a lot of private investors, it was the top long open position for private traders was silver over above dollar yen or FTSE or whatever it is, and so the evidence sort of started to compound, and therefore it became you know, an idea that I really, you know, really felt was valid, and that's the call I've been making over, you know, Tip TV and other places over the last week or two, and it's really come good. So I think one of the advantages, obviously, of somebody in my position is that you get to talk to all the experts, inverted commas, obviously, and traders on a regular basis, and so it becomes a sort of momentum of information and education that, you know, is very, very useful.
Absolutely. I will say that it's actually at an extreme on the COT report now. And as we're just starting to get a trickle of dollar strength, I think if for those that are listening to this, timing is still important where you buy. So I think, ironically, if we also look at this gold-silver ratio, we're at a key zone that has been a zone for a long, long time. Yes, we've spilled very hard, but nothing goes this hard down for that long. So I wouldn't say now rush in. There might just be a little bit of froth ready to be taken off and a little dip on a dollar strength, and then the second go for a second leg up. But all that said, the longer term is looking a lot better for commodities, particularly metals, and silver is the for me, the peach.
Right. Okay. Well, that's I suppose we agree on where that is. But I did want to talk about the Obama pronouncement on the EU situation, which I think is a unusual one.
Do indeed. What's your take?
Yeah, no, just no. I mean, I think it's the problem with that one is that we're reminded that, especially if you're in the UK, that, you know, we're supposed to have a special relationship with the US, but the special relationship has definitely been totally in special for the US rather than the UK. That anyone passing in the street in the UK accused of even a sort of slight crime is extradited within 5 minutes to the US, but the process is certainly not the same case the other way around. So we just hand over people like the Hound of Hounslow, the guy who made millions on the flash crash in 2010 on the Dow. Yeah. I mean, that was his punishment for getting it right. I mean, that's the other thing, I suppose, in the markets. It reminds you that if you're a private trader, if you get it right...
Especially if you get it right too big, then you get
vilified.
Yes, you
don't want to get it too right, because that's not allowed either. So the house has to win. And in that case, that wasn't a good house to bet against. So he got it right, and he's going to be extradited and found guilty and everything else. But there's no question about it. And you know, the special relationship again on the EU issue. You've got Obama, who I suspect he's not a great is not greatly centered on Europe in any way at all. I don't think most Americans are. But you know, I think in his situation, his intervention is it, in a way, for me, it would be nice if it turned out to be, with the benefit of hindsight, totally counterproductive.
Possibly, yes. A lot in the Remain campaign are seizing on it as a victory, if you read the mainstream media. So it's really particularly claiming a great victory. I'm a bit unsure. I had a similar chat, and I might you know, Hillary Clinton, of course, waded in and of a similar tone as well. So this is not even a president, although we're all pretty sure she's been preordained. Yes. I mean, why don't they just get all past, present, and future? Because they seem to have planned them all pretty well. There seems to be a dynasty of families here. Why don't they just get them all involved in telling us how we should vote?
Well, I'm sure Chelsea Clinton can weigh in too. But the interesting thing was, I think the last week or the week before, that we had 8 former US Treasury secretaries all suggesting that the UK should not leave the EU. So half of them, I was actually surprised they're still alive, but it was a case that
The devil looks after its own, Zach. They'll all be alive a lot longer than you and I.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping to make it to 95, but no, I mean, it's just, I suppose, you know, this is the sort of thing that if we are in a democracy, then we should be quite chilled out whether people vote one way or the other. I mean, to have to go for that sort of overkill on weaponry. I mean, I was probably initially
and the fear. It's
not
going
really
to damage you. not paying $350 million to a bureaucracy that's unaccountable and hasn't been vetted at an accounting level every single week.
They're actually framed it as racist, by the way,
because everyone's saying, but there's an immigration angle in it if you vote Brexit. So therefore, actually not handing over this £350 million means you're inherently racist, or just questioning whether it's value.
Well, no, I mean, the other point is, I don't think the Westminster, the Houses of Parliament or Westminster is actually any less... is any more accountable to the average man on the street than the Brussels is either. So, and their expenses fiddling and all the other stuff that they've done is no less savoury. So for me, in the initial start of the campaign, I wasn't really that bothered about the, you know, being in the EU or not. I mean, probably let's say the status quo would be, you know, it's okay, just leave it as it is. But the fact that all these big guns have been lined up against me or against us sort of makes me feel, you know, it makes me actually want to go the other way. So actually say just Brexit, and you know, if the government had been pro Brexit, I would probably have been opposite Brexit.
These controlled structures.
And one feels like a naughty kid, really. What, you know, whatever you're told to do, you sort of want to do the opposite. So,
I think we have no fear of being non-compliant, and we actually think we resent being channeled. I'm afraid the fear tends to work. I mean, surely the Scots should have left if that was the right thing, but it seems the fear mongering worked and kept them in.
Well, no, but all of these things, people are voting, people voted to stay, the Scots voted to stay for a few thousand pounds a year, will be voting to stay for a few thousand pounds a year as well, and, you know, it's like that. It just becomes, in the end, it's not freedom and principle. It becomes, well, you know, the Scots, for instance, I mean, they thought, well, it's better. The UK gives them 20 million, 20 billion, 30 billion a year. Well, we might as well stick with that. You know, it's in subsidies. So I think that these things are, they're always big principles, but they end up being just decided on trivia, which is very sad, really.
Yes, it becomes a bit of a celebrity Big Brother contest, a bit like the US election. Everybody just loves to hate somebody. And then they vote accordingly and they want to see people win. In fact, it's been shown in voting, people want to try guess who's going to win so that they can vote for the winning side and feel like a winner, rather than actually basing their decision on the merit of the particular electorate, even if they think that person may lose, because often they're being deceived about who should win. And what typically happens with the mainstream media is that to really brace the for argument that they want to have win, they give the other argument the lead initially and create a drama that gets the pro argument out and threatening the fear. And then they always declare a late swing just before ballot day in favor of the result they want to see win. And that is like flagging Bernays style psychologically to the masses on how to vote to be a winner, to say I decided this and that's what happened, so I was right in a way.
So again, we're back to sort of things that are decided on very trivial issues, for instance just wanting to be on the right side, rather winning side, rather than actually any principles.
Correct.
Any deep principles.
I'm afraid to say many who vote will actually want to be on the winning side, and then they'll just take the justification from the headline of the day, you know, at that point in time, a factoid or a rumor or a hearsay or, you know, something that will make them sound prudent and smart. The UK could lose jobs if this were to happen. You know, I'm not in those industries, but I don't think it would be fair for that to happen. So I voted stay, you know, on that headline that warned us of X, Y, and Z.
Well, no, I mean, the only thing is to get this back to the financial markets, which I suppose we sort of should. Just to finish, it's one of those situations where, or the analogy is in the markets where people, the pitch of a losing trade always tends to be rather better than the pitch of a winning one.
Yes.
Which is always rather sad. So, you know, you're trying to, you know, that's something as a broker I found so many times, that it was actually easy just to get a trade out of somebody or to get somebody to do something. It was actually easier to say, well, you know, Warren Buffett's bought into this. Let's buy the shares. So the pitch was easy, but the wrong pitch was easy. You know, it was, and that is something which is a great. I mean, it's always,
which proves that people make emotional based decisions, not critical thinking based decisions.
But then that's lucky for a technical analyst, because then you see that on the chart and you can react accordingly.
Exactly. And speaking of technical analysis, here's your euro right up in front of you, the euro versus the US dollar. I don't know if you can see it, but
I can.
We called on these spinning tops that this would be a rollover point up here at the one, just as it wanted to almost kiss 115, because we felt it was hitting up to these key levels where we had a number of patterns. In fact, the 114 was over here. What do you think? Euro, up or down? Is it going to go up or down? This against the dollar we're talking about. We'll come to the pound next, because this is all the Brexit thing. I mean, it would be damaging, surely, for the euro if Britain were to leave. That 350 million a week, it's got to come from somewhere else then, hasn't it?
Well, I'm sure the Germans would be delighted to pay the difference. But I think on the longer term, I've been contaminated by your view. I suppose that these are the sort of the top of the spikes within an overall down move. I'm probably a bit more bullish than you are in general, in the sense that even if there's a rollover, it would take longer to roll over, and it could spike towards 116 or 117 before getting down there. I'm sort of more in the view there's a squeeze higher, or the difficulty for traders is a squeeze higher rather than in the overall pattern over the last 2-3 years.
So you actually think, are we going to clear this high over here, the 117.18? Do you think that's going to get cleared first or not? Well, we're going to turn down.
The euro being the euro, I think we could actually do that, and then that becomes the bull trap, which then takes this down. So, anyway, this market really is going to go down heavily, from my point of view, is by having first trapped a resistance from 115, 16, 17, whatever it is. So, a bit more of that type of view.
I think this was the bear trap, this run to 117, because we took out 115 here, this little relative high, and that would have trapped a lot of people into longs. It was very impulsive as well, and then it died suddenly. But that's interesting. So we've got a different view there, and that's also good. So what does that mean for the pound? What do you think of the pound? Because, I mean, the narrative is it's the uncertainty, although the Remain campaign will say it's the risk of actually leaving, but it's actually, in my view, the uncertainty. In other words, whatever happens, there'll be a rally, in my view.
Again, I'm saying that even if it were to go much lower later, like sub-140, the first thing here over the next few weeks is a 155, 146 handle, and then down.
Yeah, so let me just get the pound up on the chart. We continue to have fairly ropey audio. I don't know what's different this time, Zacharias, but it's not been great. Let's see, the pound US dollar. So here we go. We're at 144, basically, in a pretty ugly chart that's seen a sort of falling off the roof type pattern with a wee bounce and then a plumbing. This is a marginally lower low.
Well, I mean, I think the other thing with both these crosses, they are actually quite horrible. They are, they're about as unhelpful technically from my point of view as they could be manipulating markets, but they're very, very unusual in the sort of the overall flow here. I suppose it's the same with the equities as well. So we are in very troubled or intro, whichever way you want to look at it. But I am looking for 145, because I think there'll still be the squeezed people from below 140 and, from lower levels as well. And I think that just gives this market a little bit more upside energy, even if we then go down again.
Yeah, got you. So let's pull in the Euro GBP, which is the ugly duckling of the two. So if we think there's downside scope on both the Euro USD and the GBP USD, as a result, possibly of this election and for other reasons. I think other reasons will come out on the Eurozone, like bankings and other things, weaknesses. But let's just have a look. I'll tell you what I have here while you gather your thoughts on Euro GBP, Zach. But for me, we had a long descending triangle, and I had a two-floor bottom. I had a hard floor and I had a soft floor. The soft floor was the 80 mark. And the hard floor was the 0.78 mark. And when we broke the hard floor, it signaled the real bear move for the euro against the pound. So those are my two key levels of significance, as I like to call them. And you could see how this was very much like a bear flag on this up leg between the two very key pegs. We ran up to almost parity there. And then this big descending triangle, we were on the euro weakness trade. That was one we did get largely accurately. And we saw this churn in between the range, and we said it's going to break and run. It did break and run. It did run to our 0.69 target. But we did hope also for further runs to the downside. But since then, we've had the election and the rally. Since then, it's also run up back into these two zones, and as it does, it just runs the key level, as you were referring to, the bull trap. As soon as it took out the 0.80, it's turned around and head back down to the 78 levels, 77 and levels. Yeah,
I think we're in a situation here where basically you'd have to assume that we've seen the best in this cross. We've seen the peak towards 81 pence. You're set into strength, and you'd be really surprised now if we ever broke 81 pence again.
Yeah, so the Zachmere really stop loss is up top here then, at the top of the 81 pence.
I think that would only be broken if it looked at any point that there was going to be a Brexit.
But surely the Brexit damages the Eurozone as much as it's... in fact, I could see the pound rallying on that and the euro being hammered.
I don't. Well, I mean, I differ with you on that. One, because I don't think the eurozone will be damaged any more than it already is, and also, obviously,
But the rate at which it will unravel and the speed at which it will unravel, maybe we all agree it will unravel. It's more a case of when and what might accelerate it. Not having 350 million a week to paper over those cracks could certainly mean that Germany starts questioning whether they
will
remain.
Well, but then there's the other scenario where actually both the euro and sterling are sort of hit in the same way. They're hit equally, and it's the dollar which is favoured. So that would just be neutral on euro sterling. So both would be equally damaged.
I think we're often harder on our own currency because it's close to home. I think out of the two, I'll be short this pair with that outcome, rather than long it, personally, in the Brexit outcome. But I think the dollar might just be the safe point during the run-up out of that. So, yeah, interesting. Very, very interesting.
Just to get back to the earlier point, I'll just finish maybe on that. It is the case that we're sort of making hedge fund-type pronouncements, you know, just like Odie's, you know, 2015 crash would be the one which is remembered for the 100 years. And you know, from I think with your skills, from what I've seen, they work much better just when you detach yourself from these sort of macro issues and the longer term issues, and just look at the technical side, which I think is it's great for headlines that Odie makes that, and you know, obviously if you win big on something like that, you know, the great crash of 2015, you're going to be a hero. It should have crashed basically in August. He was right. He was actually right. Should have crashed in August and never bounced back again. That fall was the one that should have, you know, and I probably justifiably that was the time that the market should have fallen. But unfortunately for Mr. Odie, central banks and others have been propping up the market.
Mm. I think technically I would still feel that the pound will be the stronger of the two. But you're quite right. Don't get sold on the narrative and the story.
Well, the reason for believing in the pound anyway is that it's so low, it's so low there isn't actually, unless something unusual happens from these levels with 30-year lows, which is what we went down to on cable, that would be it anyway.
What other trades do you have as a final sign-off point? Anything else that captivates you, Zach Neer?
Well, no, the final one is basically the indices, equities being, a melt-up, a possible melt-up scenario over the summer. And
melt-up on the basis that it's the most hated bull market and there's lots of cash sitting on the sides, because a lot of the funds I'm seeing are fully committed in cash. Is it the retail people that haven't been putting the money in the funds? Where's the money coming from? Or is it will be buybacks, debt still?
I think it's a combination of that there isn't any, negative interest rates really are giving us that
no
reason
option
to be in. There's no option. There really isn't no option. Before, with zero interest rates, there was some option. Now there's literally no option, and a little bit of obviously for the FTSE, it's a commodities index anyway. So I think that will benefit a lot. You know, if that catches up with the Dow, that should be at 7,000 rather than 6,400. And, you know, if there is inflation coming back into the US in other places, then, you know, that would actually, you know, minor inflation, it will be, that would be positive for indices. So I'm just looking for a melt up after the biggest bear trap in, you know, in the last few years, which was what we saw in January, February. So after a mega bear trap, you should be on guard for a mega bull run.
Yep, it often does that, counterintuitively so, despite valuations being very high.
The January, February, I mean, unless you were, you know, literally dead, I mean, you wouldn't have, there was nobody else left to sell, because that was so scary, that would have flushed everybody out.
Correct.
Most people out, rather.
Yeah, indeed. On that positive note about flushing it all out, I can't wait till we flush all the corrosive elements of our system out and we get a nice clean sheet, the Reset Phoenix. That was Zach Meir. Thank you for coming on, Zach. Great insights. He's talking precious metals. He's talking his view on Euro, GBP and Brexit. Have a good day. Until next time. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.